This is an Alien UFO Podcast Extra Episode, and I'm your host Simon Bowen. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases and other related events. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So in this episode, I'm talking to Lee Thatcher about his book, Distant Machines. Hi Lee, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Cheers Simon, thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Distant Machines. First of all, I've got to ask, why is it called Distant Machines?
Why is it called Distant Machines? Well, I think I just didn't want to put a title that was obvious, you know, with UFO. The subtitle is One Man's Story of UFO Contact, I know. But I just thought Distant Machines had a bit more of a cool sound to it, really.
Wasn't there a thing where you heard some weird noise on the stairs?
Yes. So, I mean, you're skipping quite a lot into the book there, but yeah, there was, we had quite a lot of interesting paranormal goings on in around 2012. One of the things was I got up in the middle of the night, just walked down the stairs, and one of the steps, I can only describe it as being activated. And I heard this odd noise coming from the step, and I put my ear to the step, and I could hear these machines going on, and it sounded like a factory. I listened to it for quite a while. When I went under the stair, we've got like an open understair sort of part where you can go under the stairs, and I tried listening from there, could still hear it, but couldn't work out what was going on. Now, I'm quite a rational kind of person, and I always try and find a good explanation for things before going down the paranormal rabbit hole. Yeah, so I kept listening to this machine. I coined the phrase distant machines then, but I kind of thought, actually, you know, UFOs can be distant machines. So that's why I named the book Distant Machines. But this particular story, I could hear these what sounded like a factory of some sort in the distance. Now, this was like in the middle of the night. I, you know, got a drink, went back to bed, and then I think I mentioned it to my wife, and she just thought, you know, another, you know, silly story, until she got up one night. We both couldn't sleep, and we were tossing and turning, and we said, should we just go and have a cup of tea? We went downstairs. She heard this, the machines, the distant machines. Were they paranormal? I have not got any explanation for it. However, I did listen to, I've listened to pretty much all your podcasts, and there was a guy that you had on a few weeks ago, I think, and I'm sure he mentioned something similar about hearing noises from the stairs. And it just struck a chord with me, and I thought, right, so I'm not the only one. But anyway, my wife, Lucy, she heard it as well. We were both sat on the stairs listening, and we could not work it out. I tried thinking, is it next door's washing machine at 2 o'clock in the morning? I mean, the walls are quite thin in these houses, so you can hear a lot of what goes on next door. The only thing that we put it down to, if we were going to go down the paranormal route, was the fact that at the behind our house is a big field, and on the field there are the remnants of what used to be some kind of building. And I spoke to a friend of mine who'd bought a house on the other side of the field, and he said on his deeds, it shows that there's some kind of factory or warehouse that used to be there.
Some kind of weird time slip sound coming through.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, the thing is, around about 2012 was when we had all sorts of weird and wonderful things happen. I'll try and fit it into chronological order. Yeah, 2012, I'd gone through, I've been into UFOs, the paranormal, ghosts, or, you know, everything to do with paranormal since I was a kid. I had my first UFO encounter when I was 10, about 10 or 11. with my stepbrother. We're in Ashburton Plainfield in Croydon, which is where I grew up. We were on our bikes and it was, yeah, it was about 85, 86. We stopped. He noticed this thing before I did. And we got off our bikes. He would have been 17, 18. We were looking at this, what appeared to be a bright light in the sky. It was late afternoon. And I think the sun was starting to go down. So we were heading home anyway. And we saw this white light. And it was accompanied by other white lights. They were obviously far off in the sky. So as a kid, I'd never seen anything, you know, like it before. These lights kind of moved in on each other and formed what looked like a diamond shape. And this thing, whatever it was, then lowered itself past the horizon, off in the distance, and that was the end of it. Weeks later, I began to have these nightmares, quite strange nightmares. Now, at the time, I didn't even think anything of them. I just knew they were a nightmare. So the nightmare was I'd be lying down on what I presumed was a table, and I'd be surrounded by what I described as the little workers. And I've always tried to maintain the description from being that age up until today, because I think the problem is with a lot of people that have had encounters over the years, sometimes they can embellish things a little bit and add little bits on. So I've always tried to keep the description as, you know, in keeping from when I was a kid. So I'd be lying on a table and I'd have the little workers around me, but I couldn't see them. So I couldn't see them, but I knew that these little workers were around me and they were just discussing between them whatever they were doing, but they weren't talking. So as a kid, as an adult, looking back, I would say they were communicating telepathically, maybe. And then the next part of the nightmare, a machine would come towards me with them. At the time, I described it as a conveyor belt of words, but they weren't words that I understood. They were kind of letters and numbers over the top of each other. So we would call them symbols, I presume. So this machine would come towards me and I'd have to look at the machine and look at the symbols, and that was it. That was the end of it. Now, as a nightmare or a dream, you know, it's not really that frightening, but I was absolutely terrified. And I had this reoccurring nightmare, the same scenario, probably five or six times over the period of weeks, months, and then it just stopped. So this was the age of, like I say, about 11 to 10 or 11, about 85, 86. And that was that. Nothing else happened of any consequence up until 2012. There'd been a few little things happen in between that time, which were quite questionable, should we say. But the main sort of encounters that I had, yeah, so let me backtrack a little bit. I'd got really into UFOs and the paranormal, and I'd say I got really bogged down with it, quite depressed, and I'd got to a point where I was sort of suffering from a depression, really, brought on by constant thinking, debating and researching all things paranormal, religion, all that sort of stuff. And I got to a point where I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be bogged down with all this UFO nonsense. You know, don't want any more to do with it. Had this kind of depression. It only lasted for 2 or 3 weeks. Came out the end of it, and it was as if the paranormal said to me, if you don't believe and you don't want anything to do with this, we've got some things to show you to prove you wrong. So that's when all manner of things started to occur. Now, you mentioned the word portal, you know, portal opening up. And I kind of think that that may have occurred over our house in 2012.
And with those dreams,
Yeah.
You look back on them now, would you, you know, maybe do some hypnosis to regress back to that time, or just do some hypnosis and just go, okay, is there anything UFO, any memories we could go back to?
I haven't, but I'm open to do that. I've been offered. I think I'd need to trust the person, trust that they know what they're doing, sort of thing. Because I think I get the impression with hypnosis, you only get one shot at it. It's a bit like going to see a tarot reader, you know, and you're looking for an answer. And if they don't give you the answer, you go to another one. And if they don't give you an answer, you look for another one and another one. Not that I do that, but I know people that do that. And I wonder if hypnosis can be the same. That's your line of work, isn't it, Simon?
Yeah, it's something where, I suppose, with the hypnotic language and how you word it, and if you're saying to your subconscious, take us back to a time in your life where you had ET contact, or you could be more specific and say, take us back to an encounter that's related to the dreams you were having. And it depends how you word it to what would come out of it.
Yeah. It was only, I think I would have been 17, 18, in about 94, 95. And we went to, Lucy and I went to a UFO conference in Solihull. And there was, what's his name? Graham Birdsall was the guy who ran the UFO group. I can't think of the other guy's name. But there was one of the speakers was talking about these dreams that people have after they've had a UFO encounter. And it was only at that point that it kind of clicked with me. And I remember thinking, I remember having these nightmares, and they were at the same time as this UFO that I'd seen, you know. So I don't even know if I'm the sort of person that could be regressed. I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure how it works.
Yeah, I find just about everybody can. But okay. It's whether or not you'll be blocked. It could be that your subconscious might find it to be too traumatic, and so it won't want to let you see it. Or it might be that actually nothing happened and they were just nightmares.
Well, this is a thing. The one thing that I don't do is claim that I was abducted by aliens. That's the one thing that I'll always stand by. You know, yes, I've definitely had telepathic communication with a UFO, which I'll chat about in a minute. But I can't claim to have been abducted by aliens.
So there's all this stuff going on around you throughout your life, which is kind of, I don't know, alien abductees talk about these things happening to them, don't they? This stuff like having the kind of poltergeist activity around your house, and synchronicities, and maybe seeing orbs and helicopters. Yeah. So it's kind of suggestive of that, isn't it? But you don't have any conscious memories of it.
No, this is the thing. You know, I started listening to podcasts back in 2010, 2011, maybe before that. Being a gardener, I could listen to whatever I wanted throughout the whole day. I had nobody telling me to not listen to anything, or, you know, I've always been self-employed. So being a gardener and working for myself, I used to listen to UFO podcasts 7 or 8 hours a day, you know, every single day. And I'd listen to as many other people's stories as possible. Which is what I'm quite interested. I'm interested in the history of people, you know, the history of not just what they have experienced from the paranormal, but how they grew up. And I think that's, with Distant Machines, the book, I tried to portray how I grew up, maybe why I have had these encounters. And it's made me wonder if I had quite a turbulent upbringing. A lot of people that I speak to and listen to who have had paranormal experiences and UFO encounters have often had turbulent upbringing. So I wondered if there was, you know, a case for that. If you have a turbulent upbringing and you go through hardship, you know, and one thing after the other, it hardens you and maybe makes you question the world. Whereas people that haven't had those experiences in life, maybe are the people that don't experience UFOs and the paranormal. I don't know. And that's why I wrote the book in a more explaining how I grew up sort of thing, if that makes sense.
Because you say when you were a child, there was weird things happening in the house, kind of poltergeist stuff, wasn't there? And it wasn't just you that experienced them, the whole family did.
So I was born at home in 75. I was never christened, but I had these christening knife and fork and spoon. I suppose one of my relatives would have given them to me as a birth present, you know. And these would frequently go missing, and they'd always end up days later on top of the cutlery set, the cutlery drawer. And this was something that my parents spoke about quite a lot, you know, when I was a toddler. So there was that was a reoccurring thing. There was one incident where I think it was during the night, my parents woke up to a whole load of mess down the stairs. My mum was doing some typing for a company at the time, so she had a typewriter. There was bleach poured into it. There was all sorts of things that had gone on throughout the night. When my brother and sister were questioned about it, they denied having anything to do with it. And I spoke to them only a few years ago about it, and they said, we still don't understand what our mum and dad were on about. You know, so even, you know, at the age of, you know, their late 40s, early 50s, they would have been able to say, yeah, actually, yeah, we did it. You know, they would have, you know, confessed sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was other sort of things like that. But so when I moved to Birmingham in 1990, so I was 15, I met my partner, who I'm still with today, when I was 17. Considering from London to Birmingham, it's 160 miles. We'd met at college. I think she was still at school at the time. I was at college, and we started dating. I went back to her house of a weekend, and we were sat in her bedroom the one evening, late afternoon, and I was looking through some photos of hers. It was just a box of, you know, random pictures that she'd taken when she was like very young. One of the photos was actually of my aunt and my nan and my sister. I was quite shocked to see it. I asked her about it. I said, you know, where's this photo from? And she said, well, I took these photos when I went on holiday, and she couldn't remember where. So I said, you know, I'll take the photo and show it to my family. And I showed it, and I said to them, you know, who are these? Can you confirm who these are in the photo? And they said, yeah, it's your Auntie Valerie, it's your Nan Hetty, and your sister Claire. Why? You know, what's the big deal? And I said, well, Lucy took this photo when she was a lot younger, and they were quite perplexed by it. They found it a bit strange. I mean, I found it pretty strange. As far as synchronicities go, it's quite a significant one, I think.
Yeah, it's like that thing where the universe is trying to send you a message, but it's almost like, but what is the message?
What is the message indeed? I think the thing is well, yeah, I've heard stories of siblings that have been separated at birth, and, you know, they travel, you know, they have their own lives up until their 20s and 30s, and then they get in a lift together, and they just happen to bump into each other and find out that they're actually brother and sister, or brother and, you know. That was a strange one. So we moved in together. Before we had children, we lived in some pretty not great flats, should we say. One of the flats we lived in, I was asleep on the, I think we just had a settee, actually. I don't even think we had a bed at the time. We had a settee, and I was asleep on it, and Lucy was sat up playing like a Mega Drive or something like that. And she said, she woke me up, and she said, something weird just happened. And I said, well, what? And she said, the room had changed frequency. and the room had, it was as if somebody detuned or tuned the radio, but the whole room was like a radio that was being tuned, which again, I've heard this many times with UFO encounters. And she said this black teardrop shape just came into the room, moved through the room, and just went out. And then the frequency came back, and it was, everything was normal again. You know, and at the time, we sort of thought, okay, could possibly a ghost, you know, could be a ghost. I've not heard of ghosts creating that kind of frequency thing, but I've heard of alien encounters and a change in frequency in the home. I've heard that many times. Again, I'm not suggesting it's either, you know, but there's no way it could have been car lights or anything like that, because the house backed onto a like a big ditch. There was no traffic behind the house. The door was shut. It was a living room and the door was shut. So there's no way light could have come in and, you know, messed about in that way. So we put it down to a strange occurrence. Like I say, years later, I'd had a bit of a breakdown because of all, you know, overindulging, should we say, in the, you know, the UFO field. And yeah, the world of the paranormal turned around and said, right, we're going to give it you with both barrels. So 2012, the summer of 2012 was quite an interesting time. I'm trying to think of the first thing that happened. That was right. I was listening to podcasts at work. One of the podcasts, it was a guy who said that he could summon UFOs. Now, it wasn't Stephen Greer. It was somebody else. And he said, all I do is, you know, I meditate for a while and I put an intention out and these things turn up. Well, I thought, well, how hard can that be? You know, and I put it off for a while. Anyway, it was in Edgbaston in Birmingham, and I was working, came lunchtime, and I thought, right, I'm going to give this a go. So I went to the back of the customer had gone out to play golf, I think, and quite a big garden. I sat at the back of the garden and I thought, right, I'll put my sandwiches to one side and I'll sit and I'll meditate and I'll ask to see something. Within a minute or two, I could hear these helicopters. And I thought, okay, it's a helicopter, great. And it was getting louder. So I thought, I'll walk onto the lawn and check out this helicopter. And I looked and it was actually three helicopters. What I was watching was three helicopters circling an orb, like a dark orb the size of a car, like a small car. And I described it as a Pokemon ball shape because it had a dark shade underneath and a darker shade on top, almost in two halves. And this thing was above the tree, but above the rooftops. And it was, you could see this orb, for want of a better word, moving in my direction. And these three military helicopters just circling it. And I looked and I just thought, how dangerous is what I'm, you know, this is so dangerous. If these helicopters were to touch blades with each other, it was seemed that close. And it was as if it was kind of ushering this orb out of the way. This orb was trying to come towards me. So this event, if you like, started to move away. And I was dumbfounded. At no point, and I'm sure your listeners will forgive me for this, but I didn't get my phone out. I didn't even think to get my phone. And I think that is, again, it's a common thing. Didn't think to get my phone out until it had gone. So then I got my phone out and I thought, right, I'll give Lucy a phone. And I said to her, you'll never guess what I've just seen. And she said, before you go any further, she said, who's on the phone with you? And I said, no one's on the phone. She said, I can hear somebody on the phone with you. Now I'm in a garden that it's Edgbaston. So the gardens are very large, very posh, nobody about. And she said that she could hear somebody on the phone with me. And then that was it. You know, we finished our conversation. I came home and that was it. And I thought that was pretty strange. And then it would have been week or two later, I thought, I'm going to try this again. I was off work. This is all, so what I'm explaining now all happened within a matter of weeks of each other. It was a day off work. It could have been a weekend. I noticed there were, you know, whether you or your listeners believe in chemtrails, you know, I'm going to use the phrase anyway, because there's no other, I don't know what else you could call them. There were five planes all circling the south of Birmingham. And, you know, the trails that they were leaving were quite considerable. So you had these five lines of chemtrails going all the way around Birmingham. I think I logged it on a Birmingham UFO website, and it, and other people had seen these planes going over. We had to go shopping. So we walked to the local shops, which was about a mile away. We came back. These planes were still going over, and they'd done a three or four laps of, I think probably 4 miles. I did write it, but probably about 4 or 5 miles. And they'd come back. And what I noticed in one of the chemtrails, these silvery orbs started to appear, and they'd float along with the trails, and then they'd blink out. I'd see one every couple of minutes. And I think over a period of time, I'd seen about 5 or 6. So I thought, you know, that this is pretty impressive. You know, I'm seeing these orbs and UFOs and whatnot. We went to a car boot sale a couple of days later, and I noticed a pair of binoculars, and I thought, I'll buy them. They could be useful. So I bought these binoculars simply for UFO spotting. But I thought, you know, the chances of seeing another one are going to be fairly slim. The binoculars I left hanging up next to the back door. Like I say, about a week or so later, in fact, it was the 15th of July, which is a significant date, which I'll come to in a minute. The 15th of July, 2012. So I'm sat at the computer, you know, messing about, doing what I'm doing. I had a plant pot in the porch fell, and it made a crashing noise. And it was like, it was almost like a trigger. And in my head, I had this knowing that I had to go outside to observe something. It wasn't a telepathic thing. It was a knowing. It was like something in me knew that I had to go out. So again, I didn't take my phone. I took my binoculars. I took the binoculars and went outside. It was a blue sky with a few clouds. I just looked up, and it was above the house. I was looking up, and I could see this line appearing, only a tiny, tiny little line way up in the way past the clouds. And it was getting bigger and bigger as it was coming down. Or the lower it got, the more I could see. As I say, I had my binoculars, so I'm looking at this thing. What I was watching, I described it as a caterpillar. It was the size of a house. It was just below the clouds. And it was made up of probably 7 or 8 red and white orb kind of, it was like a structure of orbs stuck together. And the head of it had 2 horns. And the bottom of it, like the tail end, had 2 hooks. And the hooks were kind of moving, almost like a caterpillar caught on a piece of thread. It was kind of contorting. And the head of this thing was like, it looked like it was in a cup, and it was glowing from the inside. So it was almost like, I want to say it was like plasma. It wasn't kind of, it's really difficult to explain. Anyway, this, I hope I've explained it enough for you to get an idea. So it's like, imagine the Hungry Caterpillar from like the 80s books, but red and white with horns on the top and hooks on the bottom. So we watched this thing writhing around in the sky. Called Lucy, and I said, you know, come and have a look at this. Tell me what you think. She's not remotely religious, but the first thing she said was, is that an angel? And I looked at her and I thought, what an odd thing to say. That's not the kind of vocabulary that she would normally use. And she said, that's the first thing that came to my mind, was that it's an angel. Anyway, I called the kids and I said to them, "What? Tell me what you can look at." I mean, they swore a couple of times. And what on earth is that? You know, I mean, watching it for a minute or two, and I could see it with binoculars. You know, it was filled up the binoculars, so I could see it in. If I had a camera, it would be the smoking gun. It's as simple as that. But I didn't have binoculars. And the way I look at it is that that was for my eyes only. It wasn't there to be captured on film. It was just for me and Lucy and the children. So that was that. And this thing just rose up back into the sky. Now, I made a report of it on, I think it was Haunted Skies website, which isn't live anymore. Anyway, I made a report about it. Somebody else, another sort of town further on up, 10-minute drive away from us, they'd reported it on the same website and said, "We saw it with our bare eyes and we thought it was a windsock." Now, I didn't quite know what a windsock was until I researched it. And it's one of those, it's like a tube thing that wind goes through. I think at airports,
yeah,
they call it a windsock. That's what he described it as. And I thought, it's interesting that, you know, three people can describe something and have three totally different opinions on it as to what it is.
Yeah, that's something we hear with UFOs, isn't it? Where different people will see the same thing, or they'll be standing next to each other, but they'll see something different.
Totally different, yeah. When I was a kid and I saw the UFO of my stepbrother, years later, when we'd moved to Birmingham, and it was probably, in fact, it was probably about 2012 when I was having all these UFO and paranormal stuff happening, I got in touch with him because I thought, I wonder if he remembers. Now, I lost contact with him pretty much as soon as my parents, my mum and my stepdad split up in the late 80s. Anyway, I messaged him on Facebook and I said, you know, "Do you remember this UFO that we saw?" And he claimed to have no knowledge of it whatsoever. And I thought, am I going mad? You know, and I even thought, did I see it with somebody else? But I'm 100% convinced that it was the two of us, because I remember coming home with him, discussing it with our parents, our respective parents. They were dismissive of it. They were like, "Yeah, that's great. You know, what do you want for tea?" sort of thing. Now, he said to me, "I don't know what you're on about. I don't remember seeing any UFO." And that was that. And then he said, "But I did see an orange orb in a car park that just shot up into the sky," which I found quite interesting, you know, as far as UFO encounters are concerned anyway. The fact that he didn't see what we saw, where he claimed that he had no recollection of it, but he went on to see something in his own right, which I found quite interesting.
Yeah, because if he was denying seeing the one with you, that you might have thought, well, perhaps he just doesn't want to seem weird or like a kook as seeing UFOs.
Exactly,
but then if he
yeah.
volunteers another one, then that can't be the reason.
Yeah, I found that quite interesting. So we're still on 2012. I've seen an orb with helicopters, military helicopters, ushering this thing away. I couldn't find anything online to back up my story. So I've literally just got my story to go on. And it would have been over Edgbaston Reservoir, it was a sunny day. So I presume there would have been people that would have seen it. But anyway, I'm trying to think of the next. So we were just sat one evening. Say this is all around 2012. July time, summer. We were sat down one evening watching TV. I don't remember the frequency in the room changing or anything like that. So I'm not going to add anything that, you know, shouldn't be added. But we were just sat there and we watched this light, a stream of light come out of the lamp into the room, bend a bit, and then exit through the mirror. And I always described it as a bent piece of copper. It was like an orange, it wasn't a ball of light. It was a stream of light. we just looked at each other and we just sort of, oh, okay, yeah, that was cool. And then we just carried on watching TV. Now, as far as regression is concerned, I wonder if there's something that could be looked into with that. I don't know if, you know, we were, what, for want of a better word, tampered with. I don't know what that thing was. I don't know. Could there be, have been that caterpillar UFO hovering over the house at that time and creating paranormal stuff? Who knows? But yeah, this light just, it was, I always described it as like from the film Poltergeist, the 80s one, where Sally Ann is watching the TV and the hand comes out and it's like an electrical charged hand, and then just, it's really quick and then it just disappears really quick. And that's what it reminded me of. It was just a bent piece of light. And I tried researching that, you know, what are the physics involved in that? You know, I've heard of St. Elmo's fire. There's got to be some kind of physics that you can kind of attribute to that. But there isn't. I've never found anything.
It's just bizarre. And that's something that shows up, isn't it? People have all sorts of experiences. And I remember, I think Whitley Strieber's wife said, the more bizarre it is, the more likely I am to believe it. Because this shows up so often.
So we had this light, stream of light come out of the lamp. A couple of days later, we'd got some music on and we were dancing. We'd had a couple of drinks. We were dancing and just larking about. There was a woman from a crop circle group that I was on, and we were chatting backwards and forwards. I think Lucy was chatting to her. I was, you know, she lived in America, so I don't know what the time difference would have been. But anyway, we were, like I say, we were larking about and having a drink and dancing, and it was, you know, merriment, if you like. And it was probably about 11 o'clock, half 11. And we just said, you know, should we go to bed? Yeah, let's go to bed then. So we said goodbye to this woman. We switched the computer off. And we went to go into the hallway to go to the upstairs. And there were these flashing orbs of light in the hall. And there was one at head height and one at ankle height. The one at ankle height, either or, one of them was blue, one of them was orange, but they were pulsating. I mean, we saw them for a second, 2 seconds at the most, but they were pulsating so fast. I can't even, there's nothing really that I can kind of compare them to. Just these intense flashing balls of light. And that was it. And then they vanished. And we looked at each other and we, that was a bit odd. Did you see that? Yeah, I saw that. Again, there couldn't have been car lights because we've got a porch and no light can get in. Even if light could get in from the top, it doesn't explain the orb at the bottom where our feet would have been. And this was probably 6 feet away from us. And it made me question, could these be what folklore describes as fairies? You know, are fairies from folklore actually part of the UFO alien realm? I don't know.
So wasn't there a time where, was it you were sleeping maybe on a sofa and then you just woke up standing there facing it?
So what happened with that? I was probably, I would have been 15 at the time. I've never sleptwalked. I mean, I've got an overactive brain. You know, my brain doesn't tend to shut down normally. But I'd gone to bed as normal. I woke up and I was standing up in the living room. I think my mum was decorating at the time. So there was all these rolls of wallpaper. I'd arranged all this wallpaper in what I described as Stonehenge. But I had no recollection of doing it. Again, can you attribute that to a UFO encounter? I think on its own, it was just, you know, me being, having an overactive brain, maybe.
Kind of sleepwalking.
Sleepwalking, yeah. Well, I wasn't even walking. That's the thing. I suppose I wouldn't have known because I was asleep. So I woke up standing up. So again, I don't know how sleepwalking works, whether you're aware that you're sleepwalking. I don't know. But yeah, that was a strange one.
That's a kind of classic abductee thing in a way, because people wake up and just find themselves in the back garden, locked out of the house at 3 o'clock in the morning and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think the thing is, with all the things that I've experienced, they're all one-offs. I can't quite link everything together. I mean, I love listening to your podcast because you interview people like myself that have had these encounters, and I listen and I think there's always something that somebody says that I can say, I get that. That happened to me, and I can, what I'm looking for is to try and piece together and make sense of what I've experienced and maybe help other people piece together what they've experienced and come to some kind of middle ground that we can kind of say, okay, maybe this, maybe that.
Was there a time where you had some kind of a mental push to switch the radio on? And when you did, there was a UFO interview.
Yeah, I would have been 15, 16 at the time. I only ever listened to the Friday Rock Show. Didn't listen to Radio 1 or any other radio stations or anything like that. Never listened to the radio during the week. Didn't really. I always had records or tapes. It was about 1990, 1991. And in fact, I think I actually have. No, I don't have the tape in front of me. It's a different tape. In my head, I was pushed to turn the radio on. So I put the radio on, and it was Nicky Campbell. He did a program called Into the Night. He said, right, in 10 minutes, we're going to be interviewing Timothy Good. Well, I thought about UFOs. I'd never heard of Timothy Good. So I played this, I recorded it. I've still got the tape somewhere. And I thought, somehow, why did I put the radio on at that time? That particular thing that about UFOs came up. What was interesting is that I could only record up to the last 10 minutes of the interview. So I never listened to the last 10 minutes of the interview. Years later, I managed to find an audio collection on the internet of that particular interview with Timothy Good. So I managed to listen to the end of it. But I also found, I mean, I'm going into another realm here, but there was another audio clip that I listened to, which helped me better understand UFOs in the Bible. But that's kind of like another 3-4 hour interview, I think. What I want to do is just go back to the Caterpillar UFO quickly, back into 2012 again. So we'd seen the helicopters. But what I was going to say is, once I'd seen these military helicopters with the orb, I started to see military helicopters overhead, or literally every day for months and months and months. Everywhere I went, there was a military helicopter literally above my head. But yet, we'd seen these UFOs. We'd seen this. You know, the lights in the house. And years later, you interviewed a lady actually a few weeks back called Karen Alexander, who just happens to be a woman who wrote Crop Circle book that I've got in front of me now. It's the one book that I kept when I threw all my books away, when I had that kind of breakdown. I just thought, I might have a quick flick through this. And I was looking through the crop circles, and what I found was July 15th, which is the same date as I saw this caterpillar. Well, I have always called it a caterpillar UFO, biological, whatever it was. I was flicking through this crop circle book, and I happened to find the exact, down to the every marking on it. It was a crop circle in July 15th, 1994. It was, but they called it a scorpion. If you research scorpion crop circle 94, you'll come up with the exact depiction of the UFO that I saw on the 15th of July, 2012.
It's weird because when I look at it, it doesn't look like a scorpion to me. I thought jellyfish.
What's interesting with that is that in the book, I say how I woke up, I think, 1 week after the next, only twice it happened, and I saw a jellyfish in the bedroom, just floating through the room. And it was, could have been my imagination, but I sat up middle of the night and I watched it, and I was wide awake, and I watched it move through the bedroom. And at the same time, there was a jellyfish crop circle made, which is on the back of the book of Distant Machines. What's interesting is that the 15th of July is obviously a couple of months away, which will be the 30th anniversary of the 94 crop circle. Now, what I found interesting with Karen Alexander's interview that you did is that she was describing how she set out to design a crop circle to be consciously made. I think that is where I might be heading for this July the 15th, to create a crop circle in, I don't know, mentally, I'm not too sure yet.
What you mean, kind of like that CE5 thing of mentally kind of trying to summon a UFO, but this time it's to create a crop circle?
Yeah, because the thing is, if I've had a communication with what I consider to be a biological, I mean, I called it a skyfish as well. If you research skyfish, there's all sorts of things that come up, especially the red and white ball creatures. What I find interesting is the dates. You know, the 15th of July is the date that I saw this UFO that, I mean, I call it a UFO. It could be a creature, it could be anything. The 15th of the July was when I saw it, and it let me know that it was there. The 15th of July was when the crop circle was made. Now, could that creature have made that crop circle? We don't know who makes crop circles are real, because there you can go and see them. You know, I hear people say, oh, well, this one's fake and this one's real. And at the end of the day, they're all real because they're all crop circles. A crop circle is a crop circle. How they're made is a totally different thing. You know, I mean, I may be onto something, I may not, but watch this space. I think nothing may happen. I don't know. We'll see.
So wasn't there a time you talked to your nan and she told you about people in your family that had seen ghosts?
So I lived with my grandparents in, just before I moved to Birmingham, I lived with my grandparents for 2 years with my mum and my younger stepbrother. And during that time, I used to go to the library quite a lot in Ashburton. At the time, you either, if you were a kid, you had a pass for the kids' library, which was okay, but it didn't really serve me well. I mean, I got Tintin comics and that was about it from there. But I wanted stuff from the adult library. So the only way to do that was to get an adult card. But because I wasn't an adult, I couldn't get a card. So my nan said, well, you can use mine if you want. So I'd go to the library and I'd get as many books as I possibly could on. Funnily enough, UFOs never really interested me much as a kid. It was more the paranormal, ghosts, spontaneous human combustion, all that sort of thing. Anyway, I bring these books home. And she said, oh, what you got? And I said, oh, I've got these paranormal books. And she said, I've seen a ghost. I saw a ghost. So I said, okay, you know. And she said, a few people in the family have seen ghosts. So I questioned her about it. And she said that she was in Scotland with my granddad at the time. I think it was Dundee, and they were in some sort of castle cum hotel. And she said that during the night, she woke up and she could see this silvery thread moving around the bedroom. I don't think I wrote this in the book, but I think she thought it was some sort of cobweb or something. She turned over, tried to get to sleep, turned back again, and there was a woman sat in, I suppose, Victorian-ish clothes. They could have been Edwardian, Victorian. They were old clothes. And this woman was just sat next to her reading a book. And she tried waking my granddad up, but he wouldn't wake up. Yeah, so she was, you know, that was her thing. That was her ghost story. And then she said your uncle had a couple of encounters. So I asked her about them. Some of my family are builders, so they're kind of, you know, a bit rough and ready and no nonsense kind of people. Jokers, you know, all that sort of thing. Derek, his name, my uncle, he was working in a loft, doing a loft conversion. And I think they'd had to hire the loft somehow. And he said that this cavalryman or some sort of guy in uniform with, you know, he called it a cavalryman, just appeared, but he was halfway into the seat, into the roof that he was building, which sort of suggests that whatever this apparition was standing on the level that was there previous to the loft conversion that was being built. So, which, you know, brings up so many questions about the fabric of time and the fabric of space around you. You know, what gets imprinted? You know, it's like, it's almost like having a camera and having a double exposure. You're getting two things on the one film, but which one is right? And I suppose it goes hand in hand with the stone tape theory as well.
Yeah.
But another quick thing with him, he said that he was working in his garage, and his garage kind of faced the road, I think, and he could hear this train pull up in front of him and all the carriage doors opening and shutting and the train moving on. And there's no train there. There's the remnants of a train track, but it turned out that there was a train station near where his house actually was at the time. You know, again, it's not just organic material that gets captured in the fabric of time that gets replayed as a ghost. You know, it's trains as well, you know, by the sounds of it. But my sister, when she was alive, I was chatting to her the one day, and she said I remember seeing a black triangle UFO over, I can't remember, what was it, an airport? It was down south somewhere, Heathrow maybe. But she said that she watched this black triangle overhead. So yeah, so there's a few different stories in the family.
So what is your most recent experience? Is it still going on today?
My most recent experience, I'm going to say, it all pretty much culminated in. It was all pretty much in the July of 2012. I think, see, part of my story, if you like, I grew up having this feeling of having a mission. And I've spoken to other, you know, I don't want to say abductees because it makes me sound like an abductee. And I don't class myself as that. But I've spoken to different abductees and they've all said the same thing. You know, they feel like they have a mission. And the mission that I kind of worked out was, now I'm not religious and I don't, you know, want that to be made very clear, but my interest is UFOs in the Book of Revelations in the Bible. And I was always drawn to that growing up. And if you or your listeners have ever read the book, you know, it's just a bizarre story. But the more I read it, and the more I scrutinized it and the more I slept on it and the years went on, the more I realized the Book of Revelations is a classic UFO abduction case. That was my mission, if you like. That's how I see it anyway, to kind of put it all into a book and to present it to the world, if you like.
And that is your other book. It's available, isn't it?
It is available. I think you've got a copy of it. I think you got that copy before Distant Machines.
Yeah. It looks like you put a lot of work into it.
It's actually quite a short book. I mean, I think word count, it's about 70,000 words, which in all honesty, it's not a massive book. However, yes, there's a lot of, it's years worth of research, and I pretty much wrote it back in 2012. And when I started doing, I was invited to do a number of talks, lectures for UFO groups. At the time, I didn't have the information about the crop circle that I'd found. So that is actually relatively new. But yeah, I used to do these talks on the Book of Revelations and the hidden meaning of what the book was saying as regards alien abduction. And I tell you, I did a radio show and it took 6 hours to try and explain it. And I still couldn't get to the end of it because it's that, yeah, it's that in depth and that intricate that it's a bit of a mind bender. But I think once you read it, the book that I've written, it makes perfect sense, I think. If you're interested in the alien abduction sort of, you know, hypothesis and the, you know, ancient alien hypothesis, if you like, they go, the book goes hand in hand with that. Again, it brings up more questions than it answers.
Could you tell everybody, how do they get hold of your books?
So I have my own I call it a publishing company. It's not quite a publishing company, but it's a pub. It's called Skyfish Publishing. So you'll be able to find three of my books on there. The Distant Machines is my kind of biography, if you like, that talks about how I grew up and things I went through and the UFO and, you know, synchronicities and all the UFO stuff that we've chatted about. There's more stuff in there than we've chatted about today, actually. Yeah, so that's Distant Machines. And then you've got Revelation, I forget what it's called, Revelation and Alien Abduction, I think.
Got it right here.
Go on.
An Ancient Alien Encounter.
That's the one, yeah. Which, yeah, like I say, that describes how the Book of Revelation in the Bible is nothing more than a alien abduction. And once you read it, once you see how I've kind of pulled it apart, it will make sense. It'll make total sense. If you're into the UFO thing and you're into the ancient alien thing, it will make total sense. But what I do is I try and, what I suggest in that book is to have a Bible handy and also have a copy of Stellarium. So that is it's a star chart to show you what stars and constellations were in the sky at any particular time in history. What the book also touches on, it's not a prediction, it's not a premonition, it's nothing like that, but a suggestion based on a date that's given in the Book of Revelation of a possible date of a big mass encounter, which is actually 2025, which is next year.
It'll be fascinating to see if anything happens. Does it say a location or just...
No, not a location, but it does talk of... So that I'll try and... This is why it's like it's so mind-bending. The date that's given, there's lots of different dates based on a constellation. I'm not explaining this well at all. There's a lot of dates based on a constellation and the way the moon is within that constellation. And the dates present themselves periodically throughout history, but they also touch on 2025. And then I think the next one is 2054 or something. It would take hours and hours and hours to try and explain it.
Okay.
Suppose I should say, you just have to read the book.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure. Yeah, I've enjoyed talking. It's quite funny, actually, because listening to your podcast and being on the other side of the podcast is quite cool.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
So that was an interview with Lee Thatcher about his book, Distant Machines. And a great way to support this podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to extended episodes. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you'll have an extended episode every month. And if you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to give the extended episodes a try, you can now do a 7-day free trial. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.